This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will have Lod Cook, one of the most successful business people to ever come from this state and a proud graduate of LSU. The Alumni Center bears his name, and tomorrow night, a 20-year anniversary celebration will take place as LSU observes the opening of the Lod Cook Center. 1994 was the year. George Bush, the first Bush president, as well as Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford were on hand 20 years ago. And we'll talk with Lod along with Jack Andoni, the immediate past chair of the LSU Alumni Association, Charlie Roberts, the president of the Alumni Association, and Graham Breedlove, the fabulous LSU trumpet player and soloist with the U.S. Army Band, are due as well. And we'll hear from C.B. Forgodston about the goings-on at the Capitol with 2 weeks to go in the session. Now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside our area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. We begin the week with Lod Cook, the LSU graduate whose name is on the Alumni Center and the hotel that adorns the LSU campus. LSU class of 1950 and 1955, earning his second degree in petroleum engineering, and he was president of Atlantic Richfield, later became president of Global Crossing, and now has a major new endeavor in the business world, and we will talk with him about that. But it was 20 years ago, exactly 20 years ago, that the Lod Cook Center opened at LSU, and Lod and a few of his friends, Presidents George H.W. Bush, Jimmy Carter, and Gerald Ford were on hand two decades ago as the Lod Cook Center opened at Louisiana State University. Good morning, Mr. Cook.
Good morning, Jim.
And you almost had six presidents because Richard Nixon died. He was coming. He died right before the opening. And then President Reagan, of course, was afflicted with early stages of Alzheimer's. And President Clinton, I think, had agreed to come if the others were there. So three's pretty good, but you almost had six.
And Nixon was very excited about coming. And Reagan had come, a while before, commencement address, and had talked about the alumni building while he was there. In fact, he told him he should name it after me. I wasn't so sure that was a good thing to do, but he also bragged about me graduating third in my class in high school. Then he told everybody there's only five in the class, which he thought was funny.
So you're right in the middle. But you haven't been in the middle very long in your life. And, of course, there are many people who are successful in business in the United States and across the world, but very few of them rub shoulders with presidents of the United States. How does a humble, unassuming guy from North Louisiana become friends to presidents, both Republican and Democratic? How does that happen?
Well, I got involved with most of them after they left office, and they were working on their libraries, and I became chairman of Reagan's library. In fact, I held the job for 9 years, and I worked also raising funds for the Bush Library. So it was in that connection that I got to know them. Although I knew Bush quite well when he was in office.
And Jack Andoni, you were there 20 years ago, the man who was on the LSU Board of Supervisors for right at 25 years, a prominent doctor in New Orleans, delivered a lot of babies along the way, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
How many babies have you delivered in your career?
Over 10,000.
10,000, including some of whom you now encounter along the way, right?
Absolutely.
Who are some of the most famous babies you've delivered?
There's been a lot of ex-LSU athletes who I had the pleasure of delivering their wives, and so it's a
Is this like attorney-client privilege?
Yes.
You can't give names? Well, you got involved with LSU, and I remember when I was in school in the late 70s, I read a profile about Jack Andoni in some national publication, and it showed this house of yours that was just full of LSU regalia. Did that go over well with the missus?
Yeah, I have a great wife. She's been always very, very cooperative. I told her I wanted a house decorated in purple and gold. She says, that's terrible colors for a house, but go ahead. And so she's always been very cooperative with everything.
But eventually, you gave all that away. It's now at LSU at the Andone Museum, where Bud Johnson is in charge. And it's got to be, I would say conservatively, $2 or $3 million in memorabilia, probably more than that. And you gave it all away to LSU.
Yes, sir. Thanks to my wife and three children who agreed to do that immediately when I approached them.
How did you accumulate all that stuff?
I met Coach McClendon back in the early 70s. In fact, he and his wife used to come spend a weekend with my wife and I. he had wanted me to come to Baton Rouge and visit with him and take us to supper, and I said, no, I work 365 days a year. I can't go to Baton Rouge. Would you come to New Orleans? And he did. He and his wife came, spent the weekend with us, and did that every year. In fact, he used to come with me to the hospital while I made rounds and waited. And so that's when I became involved with LSU, and I told him I would do anything that I could for LSU.
Charlie McClendon with his
yes.
beautiful wife, Dorothy Fay.
Yes, yes, she, wonderful people.
She was an exquisite lady who died just a few months ago.
Right.
Now, Lod Cook, as I mentioned, is a man of accomplishment and headed Atlantic Richfield. At that time, it was probably what? It had to be one of the largest companies in the world.
It was about fifth or sixth.
Fifth or sixth.
And all companies.
Yeah. And then there was Global Crossing, which started well and finished slow. And you laugh because you haven't had many failures, but that one was a disappointment.
Well, the good news is that we built a network, fiber optic network around the world, that's now allowing people to make telephone calls much less cost than they were before.
And that was because of your company?
Yes, we broke that price setup.
Yeah, but you're still involved. I noted on this show, I think last time you were here, you're part owner of the Roosevelt in New Orleans. It's fabulous and it has been restored to its former greatness. And there's this thing called NeuroSigma, which I think may very well become your greatest legacy.
We're excited about it. It's a new way to treat epilepsy and depression, PTSD and ADHD.
And how is that done?
It's done by stimulating the trigeminal nerve, which is the nerve right under the skin on the face. It's the nerve that the dentist deadens when he works on your teeth, but it has a clear channel right on into different parts of the brain. And by stimulating at certain levels, we can cause the brain to react in certain ways that affects the rest of the body.
And the epilepsy part was known. That was what Dr. DiGiorgio was working on. And then all of a sudden you find out this might work for depression.
Well, going back to epilepsy, he was working on dealing with it with a different nerve, the vagus nerve in the neck, which requires surgery. We stimulate the nerve under the skin without having to do surgery. And that was a big breakthrough. In the process of doing that, wives were coming to us and saying their husbands were behaving better. They had a better mood. And so something was happening besides the epileptic treatment. And it was depression.
And Jack Andone is listening intently. He's an obstetrician and gynecologist. But this would seemingly be a big breakthrough in the world of medicine.
Would be absolutely major.
And Lod Cook opened shop with his new company on Wilshire Boulevard, right across the street from UCLA. And the doctor who was working on this, Dr. Christian DiGiorgio, he just comes across the street and starts working for NeuroSigma.
That's correct.
This guy, he's about my age, but he looks about 35. He's strong stuff, isn't he?
Great sense of humor. very creative in terms of his medical work. And we have other colleagues on our team from UCLA, too, that are outstanding. Dr. Cook, who's no...
Another Dr. Cook.
Yeah, no kin. Mm-hmm. I told Dr. Cook if he keeps doing as well as he's doing, I'm going to adopt him.
Well, why does a guy like you, who's had such success, who could certainly rest on your laurels and spend more time on the golf course than at an office on Wilshire Boulevard, get involved in something like this in your 80s?
Why? Well, my partner and I felt that there was a lot of technology locked up in laboratories around the country, and we started at UCLA and sort of looked into finding this particular technology. I just have an interest in building things and making things happen. And certainly to be able to do something medically as exciting as this and as worthwhile turns you on.
297-5633 if you'd like to talk to Lod Cook and Jack Andoni, and they both are involved in medicine. And Lod Cook has a new company, NeuroSigma, which I would imagine at some point will be traded on one of the exchanges. And if this works as expected, it could be a major breakthrough, not only from the medical standpoint, from the business community as well.
Let's hope it helps a lot of people.
Well, that's what it's all about. And Jack Andoni, I do have a listener who asked a question to you about this new public-private partnership involving the healthcare system in Louisiana, and LSU, of course, is intricately involved in that. What do you think?
I'm sorry you brought that up, because I'm not in favor of it, have never been in favor of it. I think there's too many problems with it, and I hated to see the LSU system of university hospitals being taken away from LSU, because at the time that they were in existence, LSU, in regards to a lot of the chronic illnesses, were ranked in the top 10% nationally for outcomes, and were doing a lot of good work.
Well, The problems that you feared, I think, are coming to fruition. We've got a big budget mess right now as a result of this. So,
yes, sir.
But you're saying the treatment may be subpar as a result of this, right?
Not necessarily the treatment as such, but I think the interaction between private and public is very different. And I just think that there's a lot lot more to an organization. We're talking about all the residents, mm-hmm. interns, medical students that are involved in the educational system, and it's very, very difficult to train them as well in a private system as compared to a charity system.
Now, Olivia writes to you, Mr. Cook, I've been trying to get NeuroSigma treatment for my 30-year-old daughter since Lod Cook was on your show last year. I've tried getting this through Canada, and it's still not available in the United States. What do I do to get treatment now?
Well, we are approved in Canada, in Australia, and Europe. It'll be a while before we have approval in the U.S. So,
why is there red tape in the U.S.?
Well, the normal process of putting new medical devices or new medical drugs through testing just takes time, mm-hmm. and that process is going on.
Well, it is available, you say, in Canada?
Yes, it is.
So somebody can drive to Canada, perhaps, and get this treatment if there is an emergency of some kind?
I suppose so. I'm not suggesting it, because I'm not supposed to suggest it, but it's there.
It's in Canada. We'll talk a bit more with Lod Cook as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Lod Cook Alumni Center, one of the crown jewels on the LSU campus on Lakeshore Drive, with Lod and Jack Andoni. And we'll have a few other people, including the president of the Alumni Association, Dr. Charlie Roberts. And I think Graham Breedlove is here with his trumpet. So we'll be back in 90 seconds on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757. And you may reach us by email inkstershow@wrkf.org. A few more minutes with Lod Cook and Jack Andoni. We're celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Lod Cook Alumni Center at LSU. And Lod Cook, of course, is on the cutting edge of what's happening in medicine with NeuroSigma. And any prognosis on when this company will become public? Lod, as far as when the company will become public, do you know?
I have an idea, but I'm not supposed to talk about it.
Okay, that's... I would imagine it might be soon, but these are privileged things, and we don't want to get you in trouble with the Security Exchange Commission. That's an SEC that's even stronger than the SEC that you know and love from LSU sports. How did you become such a big LSU sports fan in the time that you were in other places in the world running companies like Atlantic Richfield?
Well, I ran into Charlie Robertson. He sort of makes you get excited about football and Alumni Association and everything else.
And Charlie Roberts we'll hear from in a few moments. But Jack Andoni, the LSU Alumni Association is considered to be kind of a model for the rest of the country as far as how it's run. And the alumni in California are quite often as active or more so than they are right here in Louisiana. So, Jack Andoni, how's this done?
It's done with the leadership of Charlie Roberts. He started from the very beginning to model it and determined to make it the best in the country, and he's accomplished that.
All right. Jack Andoni and Lod Cook, soon to be joined by some other stellar gentlemen with LSU connections, but Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on WRKF.
Good morning. Dr. Andoni, do you think that the legislature should reinstate the Selly plan in order to help with the budget and stop the loss of professors from LSU and other Louisiana public?
What about the Selly plan?
I think anything and everything should be done to help higher education and the health system. I think the budget cuts over the last several years have just been disastrous for us. So I'm for anything that's going to increase the budgets.
Well, the budget at LSU and for other state universities in the last 6 years has been cut 67%.
Right.
67%. Right. Well, the people warming up in the bullpen, who quite prominently are right behind me, so quite likely our listeners are getting a sampling of two of the fabulous musicians LSU has produced. Graham Breedlove, he was a young alumnus of the year a few years ago. He's a trumpet soloist with the U.S. Army Band, and he's here with Harry Waters, trombone player, and as we celebrate 20 years of the Lod Cook Center, let's turn it over to Misters Breedlove and Waters. Thank you. Graham, come here. Graham Breedlove, the Young Alumnus of the Year 2011, U.S. Army trumpet soloist. You had to get permission from the Army to come in the studio today, didn't you?
We had to get permission. We had to get the budget approved. We had to get clearance to get on the airplane. We had to, yeah, it was a whole bunch of hoops we had to jump through. And a whole bunch of people came together and made it possible for us to come down here. So one of the things we wanted to come talk about you today, with you today, is we're doing a concert tonight at the new LSU Band Hall at 7 o'clock. It's free, open to the public. One of the ways that we got this approved through our bosses at the Pentagon was the more people that we reach, the more sort of public performances that we can do, makes it more appealing for them to say, okay, go spend the money. You can, you know, buy the plane tickets, rent the vans, stay in the hotel, pay your per diem, blah, blah, blah. And so we'll want to let everybody know that tonight at 7 in the new LSU Band Hall, which is over behind that fire station on Highland Road, Highland at Astor, we have a group called Swamp Romp that's coming down. And what that is eight people that we pull out of a larger big band called the U.S. Army Blues that Harry and I play together in. And it's, you know, a band like Duke Ellington, Count Basie, one of those type of groups. And we travel a lot playing concerts. So we pull these eight people out of this, and it's kind of a Louisiana music group that Harry and I started, probably 15 years ago, called Swamp Romp. It'll be free concert, 7 o'clock, open to the public, no tickets. Just show up, sit down, and hopefully have a good time.
All right. Well, very good. Graham Breedlove, who I guess is a member of the armed forces in the U.S. Army. You have to do PT tests. You've certainly got good wind power.
Well, I took my PT test last week knowing that I was going to come down here and stuff my face for three straight days. So I passed my test last Friday. I'm good to go.
Congratulations. I want to bring in Charlie Roberts for just a moment. March 31st was the 30th anniversary of him being head of the Alumni Association, and Dr. Roberts, of course, you know a good band when you hear one.
I'm telling you, these guys are the greatest. They understand the culture of the music, and they can play. They understand the techniques, and they are learned scholars in the area of music.
All right. What happens tomorrow night? Graham mentioned tonight.
Tomorrow night, we're having the 20th anniversary celebration of the Lod Cook Alumni Center. 20 years ago, we had three presidents of the United States here. We had Governor Edwin Edwards, and we had an event with 1,012 people. We're going to try to repeat that performance tomorrow night with a few less people and a few less dignitaries. A great evening.
Well, it's been quite a success. And Lod Cook, of course, is the gentleman who made it happen. And you also have a degree from Southern Methodist University. My guess is you're not quite as involved at SMU as you are at LSU.
No, I'm not.
And that's probably because of Dr. Roberts. In fact, I think it was Jim Wharton, I'm almost certain, he said LSU scheduled a game in Los Angeles against USC in 1984, and the real reason was to come see you.
Well, Charlie uses that as the date that we got started, so he probably was correct.
Well, congratulations, gentlemen. And if you haven't been to the Andoni Museum, which is on Lakeshore Drive, there is no place in the world that has more LSU memorabilia. And all the items that Jack Andoni donated to LSU, they're there for public viewing. So, Jack, thank you for what you've done. And I would suggest anybody who has a love of LSU sports, not just football, but the other sports as well, that's a true treasure that I think some people have missed out on, but it's right next to the Lod Cook Alumni Center. Thank you, gentlemen, and good luck tonight, tomorrow night, and beyond, and good luck with NeuroSigma. I have a feeling something big is happening soon with your new endeavor. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, sir.
297-5633 is your number, and we're joined now by C.B. Forgotston, the Capitol Watcher, and man who has followed Louisiana State University for many years. And why don't we start with the budget, since it came up in the discussion with our guests in studio now, who are heading off for their venture this evening. But CB, what about the cuts to higher education? Could they have been averted, or was this inevitable?
No, it was intentional, the cuts to higher education, to free up money for other less important items in the budget, such as funding non-state agencies and non-governmental agencies. And that's just the fact. Higher education, was just not a high priority with Bobby Jindal or the current legislators. That didn't have to be cut. I think I've pretty much gotten the legislatures away from using the cop-out that the Constitution is a problem, because I proved legally and numerically with numbers that that's not the case. Bobby Jindal has purposely cut higher education because he knows that he can get the colleges to raise tuition. One of his first things to do in when he became governor was to authorize what was known as the, or is known as the Louisiana Grad Act, which is a general authority for all colleges to raise tuition up to 10% of the a year. And so the colleges are reluctant to do that unless it would generate extra money. However, in order to force the colleges to do it, Bobby Jindal intentionally went in and cut out in his proposed budgets every year an amount greater than that that could be produced by the 10% tuition, thus forcing the colleges, the boards of the various colleges, such as the LSU Board of Supervisors, to raise tuition just to keep from losing too much money. It never made up for his cuts, but at least it mitigated them to some extent. But nevertheless, the overall there was an overall reduction in college budgets every year for the last 6 years. And despite his claim that there will be extra money for the colleges this year, overall funding will be down.
Well, the cut, I think, with the tuition hikes, with a tuition increase, is 42%. But to give an idea of how significant the reductions in state sustenance have been, Louisiana Tech, 6 years ago, a budget of $62 million from the state. Today, it's $19 million. It's affected every university in this state. And some people probably could care less about higher education, but there are those who believe that a state, in order to thrive, has to have a viable higher education system to do so. Where do you stand, Mr. Forgotston?
You're absolutely right. I believe that, and the irony is that when all the legislators are back home giving speeches to the Rotary Club and the Kiwanis Clubs, they talk about the importance of higher education and that it is the key to economic development. However, when they go to Baton Rouge, they cut the budget. And, Jim, back to your point about Louisiana Tech, I believe when Bobby Jindal came in office, the state was putting up a little over 60%, state taxpayers putting up a little over 60% of the college budgets, and 40% was provided by private donations, grants, research, and other things. Today, I believe that number has more than reversed. I believe that the state puts up approximately 30%, and 70% must be generated by the colleges.
Well, Bobby Jindal is a man who knows higher education. He came to Louisiana as in his mother's womb when she got a job at LSU that enabled him to be born in the United States. And then he went to a great university, Brown. He's a Rhodes Scholar. And he was head of the higher education system, Bobby Jindal. Many people may not remember that, but he was head of Louisiana Tech and Grambling and Nichols and McNeese and ULM. He said once on this show many years ago that if he had not gone to Brown, he would have gone to one of those other schools.
Unlike you and me and most of the other people in Louisiana, we didn't go to, couldn't afford, in my case, go to a private university. I've never been to anything but public schools, and it gives you a different attitude when you've actually been there. He got scholarships, I'm sure, but Bobby Jindal has never attended a public college in Louisiana, so his knowledge about it is limited to reading about it, and I know he reads a lot, but he doesn't really understand the importance from the standpoint of, at least for a little country boy like me, going to a big LSU and being on my own and learning about a lot of things in the outside the classroom. There was a lot to learn beyond the academic side, and it was just truly important. And that's not important to General. And if you look back at his brief tenure as head of the university system, you'll find it was very undistinguished. In fact, some who were there, some of the administrators who were there when he was head of the college system, claimed that he not only didn't do any good, but he did some harm.
Well, his title was president of the University of Louisiana system, which does not include LSU, does not include Southern, but does include just about every other higher education institution in Louisiana. John at Lafayette, in Lafayette, good morning. You're on with CB. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning, you all. Hi, CB, you've talked about this before, but I think it's worth repeating to the audience. The fact that we have like $4 billion worth of statutory dedications and $4 billion worth of tax exemptions to corporations that could be cut by a small percentage, by a simple majority vote of the legislature, provide a little money for higher education. And the legislators keep saying their hands are tied by the Constitution. Would you explain that to the people one more time?
Yes. Actually, of the $4 billion that is in the Constitution, 3.5 of that is for the minimum foundation for higher education. That cannot be cut by a majority vote of the legislature. The biggest amount of money after that, which is several hundred million dollars, is debt service, which is required in order to maintain our bond rating. So that can't be cut, and it can't be cut by a majority vote. As far as the tax exemptions, yes, there are a lot of tax exemptions, and they could be cut, but it would take a two-thirds vote of the legislature to cut. My preference would be to get rid of all the tax exemptions and simply lower the rates, and I think that would be the best economic impact for our buck.
297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757. We're going to take a short break and return with C.B. Fergustin, former chief counsel of the House Appropriations Committee. CB, in a 10-second answer, can you tell us where you think the budget is right now, 2 weeks before the conclusion of the session?
Unknown.
Unknown. Okay, well, we'll find out how unknown it is when we return with CB Fergustin after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Frank Barnett producing, and a few more minutes with C.B. Fergustin, Capital Watcher, blogger. You can find out more about what he says and does by going to Fergustin.com, and former chief counsel of the House Appropriations Committee. C.B. Fergustin, 2 weeks to go in the session, and they're still counting the beans down at the Capitol, and some people say that we're headed for a major issue as far as balancing the budget. You say it's unknown. What's the best case scenario?
The best case scenario would be that the Senate Finance Committee would decide to completely deconstruct the budget, do it over, eliminate almost $1 billion in one-time expenditures, bite the bullet now instead of letting the problem grow until the next fiscal year, which will begin a year from this July 1. But that isn't going to happen. The problem we have is that by the experts, and that's the staff experts, the Legislative Fiscal Office says that there's $980 million included in this budget that will not be there next year. And, of course, if you're like the legislature and the governor, you worry about next year. And so it's no problem. But Representative Brett Guyman, who is a fiscal hawk and a member of the Appropriations Committee, says that the problem for the next budget after this one is approved, if nothing changes, will be $2 billion. Then you add to that the fact that State Treasurer John Kennedy has said very publicly that the state owes the various funds that Bobby Jindal has borrowed from for the last 6 years $1 billion. These are funds for programs that the people thought were important, that they agreed to pay additional fees or taxes for as long as the money was dedicated, and it was statutorily dedicated, so Bobby Jindal reached in and got it. So what you're looking at for the next governor then becomes a $3 billion problem. And you know, it was bad enough when Buddy Romer came in, we had a $1 billion problem and had to pass a special taxing district to circumvent the Constitution. I can't even grasp a $3 billion problem that the next governor will be facing. But the legislature refuses to address it. And this is before we have resolved the problem of funding the public hospitals, the former LSU hospitals. And I thought Dr. Andone's comments were right on point. I don't think this would have happened, or not with his vote, if he had been on the LSU Board of Supervisors when they approved these contracts with these private providers for the LSU hospitals that had 50 blank pages in it, wherein was contained all the financial information.
All right.
So that's a potential looming another $1 billion, which will likely fall apart on the next governor's watch. That's in addition to the $3 billion I've already mentioned.
Henry Johnson asks, what happened to the group benefits reserve fund? Do you have a take on this, CB?
The group benefit, yes. What it will eventually mean is a dramatic increase in the premiums that the state pays as well as the state employees pay. And what Henry's talking about is that Bobby Jindal, in order to free up money for the general fund in another budget gimmick, arbitrarily lowered the premiums. While that sounded like a good thing for the state employees, and they got a short-time premium reduction, it actually also freed up money that would have gone to pay premiums and to keep the fund reserves up to allow that money to be spent in the state general fund, never to be seen again. The bottom line is that the next governor will, in order to keep the group benefits program, that's group health insurance for, I think it's about 200,000 active and retired employees, they're going to see a dramatic increase in their share of the premiums, which is only a fourth of it, and then the taxpayers of Louisiana will have to put up a huge amount of money to make up for the three-fourths that's paid by the state. For not too great a benefit, actually.
All right. Andrew Batson writes, robbing Peter to pay Paul, Governor Jindal cut higher education to put the burden on the students who primarily depend on TOPS, which is paid for by the state.
I agree. And ironically, then the legislators start griping about the fact that TOPS is costing too much. And I'm going, duh, look in the mirror. You did it.
Well, CB, you're in a bit of a feud right now with a new Advocate columnist, Quinn Hillier, who lives in Alabama. The Advocate on the front page touted him as a new conservative voice of the Baton Rouge and New Orleans Advocate. Quinn's a former press secretary to Bob Livingston, and he's also an accomplished writer and a candidate for office in Alabama last year. What's this dispute with Quinn about?
Well, Quinn has taken it upon himself to be a defender of all things Bobby Jindal. So when I pointed out that the new press secretary for Bobby Jindal has not been seen around the Capitol or in Baton Rouge in weeks, and that she is actually doesn't live in Baton Rouge. At least that's what she confirmed to me, despite what she either lied to me or lied to Quinn. I don't know which one. So Quinn decided that, you know, I shouldn't be beating up on a little girl, even if she is on the state payroll. So he chivalrously jumped in as a good Southern boy and defended this woman's honor. And I just find it bizarre that a press secretary needs a editorial writer at The Advocate to defend her. It seems like that's kind of getting things mixed up. If she can't handle the media, she shouldn't be the press secretary, and she shouldn't be on the state payroll if all she's doing is helping Bobby Jindal in his presidential bid.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love Quinn. He's been on this show many times. Don't agree with him on everything, but I do think The Advocate should note that he does not live in the state of Louisiana, and yet he's writing about the intricacies of state government.
Yeah, and he's had no experience in those intricacies because although he grew up in New Orleans, that doesn't mean by osmosis he learned the legislative process.
Okay.
So, you know, it's fair game. He and I both have the First Amendment right, although a lot of people like Quinn think that the First Amendment only belongs to the media. But that's not how I read the Constitution. I don't think you read it that way either.
Okay. Paul Pastorek just sent an email. Remember him? He says,
"Oh, my God, do I remember Paul?"
Well, you don't sound real enthused about it.
Oh, no, I wish he would stay away. I mean, he is the most arrogant, condescending individual that I have met in many a day.
Well, other than that, you like him.
I don't like his policies or anything about him. I mean, it's attitude is it's my way or the highway.
Well, it's a very nice and long email, and if he's listening to the show, certainly I don't share CB's opinion of Mr. Pastorek, but he says, Kathy and I will be moving back to New Orleans in August, so CB, perhaps you can be part of the welcoming committee.
Yes, I've already sent out a couple of welcoming tweets, and hopefully he won't be involving himself in the New Orleans or Louisiana public schools. I think he's done enough damage.
What do you make of this Common Core stuff?
Well, I tell you what, Jim, it's very difficult for me to make anything of it because I have asked over and over of the supporters, including Lobby, of which I'm a member, or Jobby, Jindal Association of Business and Industry, to just explain it to me. In other words, when I was taking math in the public schools, you know, it was like Farmer Brown went to town with two bushels of corn. Corn was $2 a bushel. Farmer Brown came back with $4, okay? And I'm saying, explain to me how Common Core changes that. And they said, "Well, it's about making the kids smarter." I said, "Okay, I am absolutely 100% behind making kids smarter. Explain to me the difference between Common Core math and my Farmer Brown went to town." Well, CB, you're just being obstinate. This is about making the kids smarter and be able to be more competitive. I said, "I want them to be smarter and more competitive. But just give me an example of how Common Core works." And frankly, I fell for it initially as a member of Jobby and of the business community. You know, oh, it must be great, you know, Common Core. And then I started saying, wait a minute, CB, you're buying into the sizzle. What's the stake?
Right.
And the more I asked about the stake, the more I got suspicious about what Common Core is, because you know, in government and politics, if you can't explain something in less than a minute, then you got a real problem, from at least a PR problem. And nobody's been able to explain it to me in hours, much less a minute or less.
Well, CB,
so I don't know what it is. Do you know?
It is good. Well, I don't, but the governor has sided with the teacher unions. it's an interesting development, and his own secretary, superintendent of education, who's been a staunch defender of the governor on everything else, is now not in the same camp with Bobby Jindal on this one. But
well, typically Bobby Jindal has positioned himself, depending on how the polls go and the winds blow, to be able to say in his presidential bid that he's for Common Core or he's against it, because both would be true.
All right. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on with CB.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mr. Forgotten. I just want to thank you. You were telling the truth and were prescient when you prophesied that they would be dipping into that coastal restoration money, and just makes me angry as a voter and as a citizen here for what's going on up there with that.
Well, thank you for remembering, Phil. And that's, to me, I think that's Bobby Jindal's or the next governor's secret stash to solve this $3 or $4 billion problem.
All right. And lastly, a listener says that we haven't mentioned, and we should, and he's right, that Bob Odom died on Saturday, who was in office 28 years in Louisiana. He was a guy who had his ups and downs, CB.
Yes, he did, but I think that when he first came in to office, he came in as a reformer, and he did a lot of cleanup work. So, you know, you look at his overall body of work, it may be a wash or it may be a slight plus, but history will judge.
Services tomorrow at Zachary Baptist Church, 2 o'clock, for former Agriculture Commissioner Bob Odom, who was in office from 1980 to 2008. Thank you, CB.
Thanks, Jim.
Take care. Always a pleasure. We're joined in our remaining moments by Sashika Balshan. She is the founder and a youth advocate for a group that's called OMG, and the OMG Youth Conference is this weekend, and that's not Oh My God, is it?
No, Jim. It stands for Outstanding Mature Girls.
Outstanding Mature Girls. So
yes.
What does one have to do to be an outstanding mature girl?
Well, you have to be 12 and up, and of course a girl. The conference will take place on Southern's campus on May 31st. That's the Saturday after Memorial Day weekend. So you have nothing to do. This is our second year doing it.
Next Saturday.
Yeah. This is our second year doing it. Last year we went out to Ponchatoula and gave it a shot, and it was wonderful. That's whenever I was with an organization. But this year I'm on my own and just taking it, you know, full speed ahead with tons of great community sponsors. Mm-hmm. People have stepped up to the plate and just helped out tremendously. We're also going to have free HIV testing on site.
Well, that's important in a community that has the largest proportion of citizens with HIV in America.
Yeah, and just pretty much bringing awareness to the youth. And just letting these girls know about making responsible choices. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. You're going to get the information, but it's going to be tons of fun. We're not going to leave out the fun at all. We're going to have breakout sessions, free food for the girls, and tons of speakers. Hip Hop Doc is going to perform.
Ronnie Whitfield?
Yes.
He'll be there?
Mm-hmm. He's going to perform. And
is he going to rap?
Yes. He's going to entertain.
He's now on the LPB on occasion, and he, of course, is one of the great characters in our community and an outstanding doctor to go along with it, the hip-hop doc, Ronnie Whitfield. Outstanding Mature Girls, women ages 12 and up. It's a free event, and it is at Southern University a week from Saturday, 9:30 to 3 in the ballroom, right?
Yes, the student ballroom.
Right next to the bowling alley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, LSU no longer has a bowling alley. I don't think you can have a great university without a good bowling alley. And so I think King Alexander needs to work on that. Maybe we could have King Lanes at LSU. But all kidding aside, this is a significant day, and you're inviting people of all ages. But I would think that most of the 300 or so girls will be
yes,
younger.
300 girls. And go online right now and register at www.omgyouthconference.com. One word, register. It's free.
OMG Youth
OMG.
Conference. Is that LOL?
Well, okay. We have breakout sessions at We have an LOL breakout session, actually.
Do you really?
Yes.
Okay. At the OMG conference.
Mm-hmm.
That's a week from Saturday, the 31st, Clint Eastwood's 84th birthday. Sashika Balshand will be there in charge of the Outstanding Mature Girls Youth Conference for 2014 at Southern University. We thank you for joining us today. Back tomorrow for Frank Barnett. I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.